Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, survivors, caregivers, and all of our followers that are tuning in to the TBI One Love podcast, which, as you know, is spreading a positive form of hope, inspiration, and education to those that have been touched by a brain injury, as well as awareness and prevention to the general public. We'll wrap up our February series. Hard to believe we're already here in the new year, but we have an unbelievable gift that we're really going to enjoy. And who I'm referring to is Mrs. Marinette Brennan from Ireland. That's right, Ireland. She is a speech-language pathologist that is passionate about neurocentric education and the importance of move to learn and learn to move, which we all know after sustaining a brain injury, we do have to keep moving and learning at the same time. And we also have to really adapt with the change, which is another thing that she really helps with. Mrs. Marinette is also a member of the Irish Audiology Association, the Irish Association of Hearing Aid Audiologists, sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong, as well as the American Academy of Audiology. So we have some really amazing content that we're going to discuss with her. And like I said, if she's taking time out of her busy schedule and the hour change to really contact us and give us some of her guidance all the way from Ireland. So without further ado, let's get this started. Miss Marinette, can you hear me?
I can, James. Hello.
Hello. Well, thank you once again, not only for all you do, but giving us the opportunity to speak with you.
Very, very welcome, James. And thank you for everything that you do just to give hope and inspire people and raising awareness of traumatic brain injury.
Well, thank you. That means so much, especially coming from you and the specialties you do. You heard me give a brief introduction about yourself. Would you mind sharing a little bit more for our listeners?
Well, I am originally from South Africa, and I have been living here in Ireland for the past 20 years, and it's amazing how time flies. I was originally just here for a year, working as a speech-language pathologist with children with cerebral palsy, and I just fell in love with the country, the beauty of the country, all the opportunities that it has. And 1 year, then it turned into 3 years, 4 years. Oh, and the rest is history. I'm now married to an Irish man, and we've got four lovely children. So life is busy, but, you know, an absolute blessing, I have to say. So I am at the moment, I'm working both in the role of both speech language therapist and an audiologist. So in South Africa, we dual qualified. So we trained in diagnostic audiology and in speech therapy. And then I studied further. I did my master's then in speech language pathology. And my caseload is very varied. I work in the capacity of an audiologist where I see a wide variety of cases. Mm-hmm. So it's your usual typical audiological care from balance assessments, hearing aid fittings. But the main part there was when I started at the practice in 2013 was to set up the auditory processing disorders clinic, which mm-hmm. is a real passion because as a speech language therapist, the two areas of audiology and language, they actually go hand in hand, listening and language. So it was a wonderful privilege to be able to do that. And it was part of that role that we do see a great variety of patients from children to adults. So it could be, you know, more sort of like a childhood kind of a profile of auditory processing, but we also see a lot of, say, traumatic brain injuries mm-hmm. and then the impact of traumatic brain injuries on language, on listening and auditory behavior. And then the other hat that I wear then as a speech language pathologist, again, very varied, but mostly around the area of neurology. So acquired brain injuries, traumatic brain injuries and congenital sort of neurological conditions. And I guess I've spoken to you before, James, so you know a bit about my story. And so, like I said, I'm a mother of four children, and my youngest, so I have twins, they're the youngest, and the youngest of the twin, he was born 1 minute after his sister, he was diagnosed with CMV. And CMV basically causes brain calcification, hearing loss, and vestibular difficulties as well. So his diagnosis is cerebral palsy, and he also has some autistic traits. And I guess for me, that's when my thoughts around neuroplasticity and the way that I deliver my therapy changed quite dramatically.
Exactly. Not only, first off, wow, it's so amazing what you do. I was hoping you were going to recap all that once again. I'm glad you did. And also, it's very important that you shared your own personal journey. And we'll get more detail about that and some other steps in your line of work. But it's very inspiring, not only the difference that you personally have made and continue to make with individuals that are going through any journey in life that deal with audiology or speech pathology, but especially for us brain injury survivors. And we'll talk more about that right now. But I also think, before I begin that, it's very beneficial and very inspiring as well that you've used your personal pathway and adapted it to your professional, to where you're getting, not only you can obtain and use what you know, but you have also that different perspective of learning the new advancement, both in your professional lifestyle, but also then you can filter in your mother lifestyle to help your legacy as well. That is amazing.
Thank you.
You know, and speaking of, you know, with your, you know, professional path and everything that you do, when you were talking about, obviously, you know, acquired anything neurological with that wide range, what are lessons both personally and professionally, since you have that scenario going on now, that you have learned about neuroplasticity and the brain's actual potential to change?
And, you know, I'm delighted that you asked that question, James, because for me, that was like the biggest shift in the way that I looked at the therapy and the care that I delivered. And it was my son, Michael, who's six now, who taught me that lesson. And I'd say as a therapist, you learn certain therapeutic techniques, especially when I trained, which is now about 20 years ago. There's a lot of advancements in science and, you know, in the world of speech and language therapy and neurology and all of that. And we do our CPD and we try to stay abreast with the latest research. But it's only once you're faced with, you know, sort of like a traumatic event yourself, where you have a child with neurological difficulties, you know, even though it's congenital, that you begin to really delve very deep into the research to see what is out there, what has changed. And even though we would have had a lecture on neuroplasticity, for us, it would have been, you know, in those years, the 1990s, it was very much about sort of like compensation and compensatory kind of techniques. And then when you have a child with a disability or difficulties, then suddenly you go, well, I do not want to compensate. I want to intervene. That's what I want to do. And then you read about neuroplasticity and what lots of texts refer to as the science of hope. And you learn that it has to be intensive and you have to relay those pathways and that the brain has potential to change. And when you get that, you basically have hope. And we've spoken about different kind of interventions that has inspired me, or different kinds of people that has inspired me. And there's sort of two people that I want to mention. And the one is the Domans. They have the most amazing book and an organization there in America. Because the one night after meeting my son's multidisciplinary team, even as a therapist, it's difficult to be in a therapeutic role wearing your mother's hat. And they basically said, you know, he's got cerebral palsy and he's got all these difficulties in hearing loss and vestibular difficulties and cognitive impairment and microcephaly, and they listed it off. And I basically just, when I left there, I felt hopeless. And it was, you know, looking at, say, the research that the Domans from the Doman Institute has done. They have this saying where they say there's no such thing as false hope, only false hopelessness.
Exactly.
And looking at that and how I felt, I was Googling all kinds of things, and I was Googling potential, and all their work came up. And what I learned from it was the importance of that intensive intervention. And even though we're dealing here with a lot of cognitive difficulties, how important the motor element is of movement and challenging the vestibular system, and how that helps to fuel the brain so that the brain can be open to learning. And that was a big shift. And then the other book that was absolutely amazing is from an author called Karen Pappy, and it's the boy that could run but not walk. And again, it's just all about neuroplasticity. And it was just such an eye opener, and it just brought that hope. And I find that when, you know, the caregivers have hope, they who need to look after the survivors or say the children with the cognitive impairments or the difficulties or the challenges that, that their children or loved ones might face. But if the caregivers can have hope, that helps them wake up in the morning and say, let's try again. Let's tackle that difficulty or that challenge again with fresh eyes. And I think through that, I have learned, and I can see with Michael just the progress that he has made from walking in a little walker to now being fully mobile, and he was able to, he's hyperlexic, so his reading is phenomenal. He's now six and he can tell you everything about the planets and even the periodic table he can recite, but it just shows you how incredible the brain is, and that if we are empowered with knowledge and skills from different professionals or different resources that's out there, that we can make such a significant difference, and that there's no such thing as hopelessness when it comes to the brain.
Exactly. And I think that's all great information, very powerful points that need to be addressed. And I also like some key elements that you stated in that. Not only one, most importantly, you don't lose hope, you lose hopelessness. Mm-hmm. That is a constant reminder that unfortunately, everyone needs to apply to their daily routine, because it's natural that our brain and us convince ourselves that, okay, we've lost our chance of hope, which you don't lose. You lose hopefulness.
Mm-hmm.
I also like how you stated with, you know, that analogy is when you wake up and start your day with just having an inch of hope, like saying something simple, oh, it's going to be a good day, or I'm going to do that. Your neurological pathways actually create a more positive perspective and create new neurons. So that way it's not only going to be doable, but the best part is it becomes a routine, which then becomes a habit, and your brain processes it that way. So not saying that you're going to have a negative aspect. You're actually just going to always be able to locate more positive things easier.
Absolutely.
Well, then not only we'll think a different way, act a different way, and most importantly, we will live a different way.
I totally agree with that. Like, we were very fortunate in the early years while I was working, we had an au pair from Spain, and she had one thing that she always used to say, Michael, you can, Michael, you can. And there was nothing that she didn't think he couldn't do. And I love that. And it might have been ignorance on her side, but I love that, because we always said, you know, regardless of all his challenges that he had, he could. He was never told, oh, you can't do that, or because of this, you're not able for it. But that positivity is so, so important. And to be able to speak life the whole time, I think that that's so important. Like, no negative words, like, yes, you can look at the scans and you can see the damage, or you can see the difficulties and the challenges on paper, but that is just on paper. And I think if you have a positive attitude, that can, like you say, that positivity creates again those neural pathways that helps and that motivates. And motivation is obviously something that you do need when you're facing with daily challenges.
Exactly. And again, we have the ability to obtain that. And I think it's also good how you had mentioned to get different opinions from others. It's always good, you know, no pun intended, but a doctor always advises us with any stage in life, feel free to get another opinion or pattern if you like, which is not saying anything bad. It's also just saying, look, you should be able to go out there and get more information, get different perspectives, get different opportunities. It's going to help you mentally, physically, and emotionally, but it also helps you most importantly with the way that you're thinking, instead of, again, which is very common, getting upset or frustrated when one avenue doesn't go exactly how we're going to think it. And then you go into that mindset of, oh, That's it. I've lost hope. But there are so many roads you can take. It's not just
absolutely.
One street.
That's it. I always say, when a door closes, a window opens. If a window closes, there's always a chimney. So there's always a way.
There's always a way, yes. And I think it's also good, you know, speaking of always a way, another thing you brought up with that inspirational example of not being able to stand up and walking and running is you brought up the term balance. And I think it's very important for our listeners of the general public, but especially our caregivers, to understand more on the impact of a brain injury and hearing and balance.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, you know, the kinds of patients that we see in our clinic, it varies depending on the injury, whether it's a closed head injury, whether it's open head injury, whether it was just a concussion. It varies very much. But sort of like the typical kind of a profile looking, say, from a hearing point of view, what we do see is that what can happen is that damage or displacement of those delicate bones in the inner ear can happen. You can see a rupturing of the eardrum. So all of that can basically cause hearing loss. Now, in most of those cases, it's basically what we would call a conductive hearing loss that can be, you know, restorative with surgery and the care of an ear, nose, and throat consultant. But sometimes, depending on whether the damage in the cochlea is, or how badly, say, the cochlea then is damaged, which is more sort of in the inner ear, that damage can be permanent. Also, what we do see with a lot of people is that if there's any disruptions in the part of, say, the auditory system, that can also cause difficulties then with auditory processing and auditory processing difficulties. So, like I said, that's an area that I'm quite passionate about and that I see a lot of patients in. So with auditory processing, you might see people struggling to process speech in the presence of background noise, struggling to process speech when there's multiple speakers. So that's that whole thing about attention and divided attention between this listener and that listener. And the same with, say, speech and background noise. If you say in a noisy kind of environment, it's sometimes very hard to block off the noise on the one side while you're trying to listen to the speaker who might be on the other side. So all of that kind of attention, listening attention, that focus attention can be affected. Then we also see the difficulty with when memory comes in or shorter memory difficulties, that auditory sequential memory or the ability to follow instructions or directions. They might remember the first part or the last part. So all of those might be challenges. So from speech therapy audiological point of view, we would work very closely then with caregivers, because it's very much about how we talk to the patients or the survivors. So it could be something as simple as slow down your speech rate. I always give the example, if I'm maybe working with parents with auditory parents of children with auditory processing difficulty, and I always give the example of, have you ever watched young children, preschool children, watching Peppa Pig? They're sitting there staring at the telly, absolutely quiet, completely focused, and then when you watch them watch something like SpongeBob SquarePants, they're up there and they're doing the actions because the speech is too fast for them to process. So when we slow down our speech rate, the person basically has more time to process what is being said. But sometimes what happens is if you say a sentence and the person is not responding, you very quickly repeat or you rephrase. But then that person has to start processing that same information again from the beginning. So it's so much better just to slow down. So usually we say there's one research article that says about 123 words per minute. That's how slow you should really speak. And that's very much the way I'm speaking now, which is not overly slow. You're not saying, come on, Marinay, hurry up. You're listening to my words. And for me as a speaker, I actually have time to regulate my breathing. I have time to get my tongue to around all the sounds so I can have clear articulation. So it's both the benefit for the speaker as well as for the listener. And at the end of a sentence, I just pause briefly for the person just to process that whole sentence. Because the difficulty when we speak too fast, the listener has to engage in what's called auditory closure. They have to keep trying to fill in what the ear didn't hear because the brain couldn't process the information. And constantly the brain is working so much harder than what it needs to work. So if we can just slow down our speech rate, that is just probably the most important tip that I can give anybody with regards to, you know, just helping with auditory processing. And then looking, say, from a sort of like a little bit more about the hearing side and the impact of traumatic brain injury, we do have a lot of patients who also struggle then and suffer with tinnitus. So that's ringing, buzzing, hissing in the ears. So always when we say when there's tinnitus involved, it's very important to consult an ear, nose and throat consultant. Usually what they will do is they will do an MRI scan just to make sure everything is okay, sort of from a just from a medical point of view. And then the next step is usually then to see an audiologist, because there can be many different reasons why there is tinnitus in the ears. It could be because there's hearing loss, and then the hearing loss needs to be addressed. And it could sometimes also happen that those little outer hair cells, because of the impact of the head injury, they can sometimes be damaged. And then those little outer hair cells continue to fire, but it doesn't have the same inhibitory action that it usually has. So then we work with the patients, and you know, we can recommend things like this brilliant the Wide Xen tinnitus masker, which is an app that works really well. It also has some breathing and relaxation techniques as well. And then Phonak has an invisible, well, I call it invisible because it's down the ear canal, hearing aid called Lyric. And it's actually quite good also for people with tinnitus, because it gives that auditory stimulation, and the person, you know, wears it, you know, for 3 months without having to remove it. So it provides that continuous auditory stimulation, different to, say, a traditional hearing aid that you have to take out at nighttime. So the whole sort of area of hearing aids and hearing aid management can be very powerful, even for auditory processing where there is no hearing loss, but there is still a person presenting with hearing loss-like behaviors. We've had great success with fitting people with what's called low-gain hearing aids that helps just to filter out the background noise, and that just raises the speech a little bit more for better and easier processing. And then there's also wonderful apps out there. There's a program called LACE. It's an online computer-based program that can help people with speech and background noise and training them for speech with competing speakers or dealing with rapid speech, which is really good. And it's not just for people with hearing loss, but it can also be for people with just struggling with processing and processing speed. And then there's another one called SoundStorm, which is an app that helps also with speech and in background noise.
Wow. And it's amazing how, well, multiple elements. First off, that is a great example of with the difference with the kids, how you a difference of just it going slower to where they understand and then with the SpongeBob SquarePants, which kids like that, but it's also explains more of how it's so much more at a faster tone of audio. So you they have to try to pay more attention, and you can get some or none at all. So that was a great example. Wow.
Thank you. And then you asked about the sort of like the balance or the vestibular side. And again, that can vary very much. You know, a lot of people will report vertigo, that they struggle with dizziness or vertigo. They can explain that maybe their world is sort of tumbling, or their head feels like it might be bobbing. So again, part of my work that we do is we do comprehensive vestibular assessments. So we look to see whether the vestibular system, the inner ear, those semicircular canals, we look at those semicircular canals, because what can sometimes happen, even though it's quite rare, but that we have seen is that there's a condition called superior semicircular canal dehiscence, or SSCD, and that can happen during head trauma, where the uppermost part of the semicircular canal, there can be an opening or there can be a crack there, or sometimes if there's a temporal bone fracture, it can also affect and cause SSCD. And basically what happens is that there are different presentation, but it's and different theories what is happening, but it can be that sudden increase in that intracranial pressure that can cause something like otophonia, where they hear themselves, that they can hear all these internal sounds. They can hear the thump, thump, thump of their heartbeat. They can hear their blood pulsing through their veins. They can hear even the twitching of their eyes. And the way that we see it presenting a lot is that these vertigo, these dizziness episodes is triggered by loud sounds, or when the patient is coughing or sneezing. So that is something that we do see. And then we see people just because of the coup contra coup effect and the head trauma and the concussion that they're feeling, is that vestibular visual feedback that they're getting, there's a bit of a miscommunication despite the inner ear and the vestibular system being fully intact. And then the role of your vestibular physiotherapist, or I think in the States it's called physical therapist, or you also get audiologists working in vestibular rehabilitation, is mm-hmm. so important. And it's just that looking at the input that the patient is getting, because balance is that interaction between how well we use our eyes and how well we use our feet, that proprioceptive information that we get. And that tells us where our head is in terms of our body and space, that whole spatial awareness that can sometimes be affected, that spatial disorientation, basically feeling that you or your surroundings are in motion, struggling to find your footing, judging distance. So there's a lot of therapy that can help with that, where they work on eyes and eye tracking and eye movements, and then also proprioceptive input. I did a course with a company called Z-Health, and it was unbelievable. It was called R-Phase, and I learned so much through this training course about proprioception and all the different levels of proprioception and how we can stimulate that part just to give us that better grounding and just that stability that we need to make us feel that we're secure on the ground, but then also the visual exercises, so that there's not that same visual vestibular mismatch that we're sensing after, say, head trauma.
Exactly. And I think that's very important, again, not only, of course, the multiple opportunities, but nonetheless, how we have the power of technology to really help us advancement with the different apps, the different programs. Also, how you mentioned the different hearing aids. And there was just a movement recently within the past, I want to say 4 to 6 months max, where you don't have to have a prescription to get a hearing aid. You can start getting them. Not only there's different styles, but again, there's movements with technology. They're really helping everyone learn to grow and growing to learn, but also where they can do it anywhere at any time instead of only having to go to a certain area or a certain program location, which is both good and bad, but at least they can take home, most importantly, what they learned and use it to where they feel more comfortable, let's say, in their own boat. You know,
totally. And I think like when you talk about sensory and sensory deprivation, I almost feel that it is a basic human right to be able to see and to be able to hear properly. If you're in need of, say, glasses or hearing aids, that it should be accessible to all and not because you cannot afford it or because you can afford it. I think the over-the-counter movement is very positive. And like you say, in some cases where there is ear pathology, it is better to go and see a diagnostic audiologist. But for a lot of cases, it's your presbyacusis, it's your age-related hearing loss. And it's so important to have hearing amplification, especially for age-related hearing losses, because there's such a strong correlation between hearing loss and cognitive decline and the onset of dementia. So there's a lot of research out on that. So the earlier amplification can start, the better, and finances shouldn't prevent people getting access to audiological amplification.
And I think that's great, again, and there's so many steps, so many opportunities. I like how you also just listed, you're listening to some great information. Of course, you're just being yourself, but how that's very common, how you stated, where an individual or individuals is not usually just one person, where they can't attend it, whether it's time frame, location, cost, their schedule. I mean, there's so many reasons why not. But again, with individuals like you behind the wheel on top of the power of technology, they're able to do it, what works best for them, with them, and of course with their family. And that's another thing I wanted to address. When we had talked previously, I think it's very important what you're doing, not only of course for others, and especially those that have a sustained brain injury, and it's phenomenal how you're assisting both children and middle age, and also your own child as well. But what I really enjoyed, and I think everyone's going to enjoy this statement as well, is how you're also helping the individual's family and having them involved in the whole program. So it's not to where they're just getting dropped off, and then they pick them back up like a school program, even though it is, but it's where they're not, their caregivers are not only learning more about what they're doing, but also seeing for themselves how they're doing it. So that way they're up to pass with them, and when they take them home, they can be like, okay, you need to do more, instead of, okay, what did you learn today? Please show me what you did, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's it. And, you know, that's the whole thing around if you're talking about intensive intervention, you cannot expect, even if you have all the finances in the world and you have the best, you know, service out there, like, people learn better in their own familiar home environment with their communication partners, whether it's their spouse, whether it's their children, whether it's, you know, the grandparents. So I think it's absolutely vital for all caregivers to
exactly.
be part of this journey. And like I, for me, if I'm working with people, the caregivers have to be part of it. If they cannot attend, I will video record our session and I will email or I will send it on WhatsApp to them with explanations of this is what we work on. If there's any questions, or I'll follow up with a phone conversation. But having them informed, having them educated, teaching them the strategies as well to help let communication be as fluid and as effortless, because they have to help with problem solving when there are word finding difficulties or when there are memory challenges or when there's maybe a situation of say sensory overload because of the environment. So this whole thing, like I sometimes have, like I don't care if I have 12 people sitting around while I'm doing a therapy session, it is so incredibly beneficial to have everybody involved, whether it is, you know, it's the people that they that the survivors work with and see on a day-to-day basis. If it's the bus driver, it is the bus driver. It is granny and granddad, they are there as well. It's everybody who is a part of that person's life. And for me, that is like that whole family-centered kind of a approach where the individual is at the center, but you've got the community and the carers involved in the process. This whole idea of therapists arriving at the bedside and just working with the patient and the family never is never part of that journey. I don't agree with it. Or therapists, you know, or clinics where, you know, the survivors get dropped off for their therapy session.
Mm-hmm.
It's vital for the caregivers to be part of that journey.
I agree 100%. And a lot of places do not do that. And that's why
mm-hmm.
I want to make sure to mention that, because a lot of our listeners not only need to understand if they're just going down this pathway or if they've been going down this pathway, but they're not that involved, they need to really understand how important it is both for the survivor and the caregiver to really be in this journey together. Not saying that they aren't, but just even more. And if the survivor is still either in rehabilitation or going to
mm-hmm.
see, you know, a clinic, whether it's PT, OT, speech pathologist, you name it, and it's not, even if it's not in the rehabilitation format, still getting involved so that way, just like we mentioned
mm-hmm.
earlier, you're learning to grow, but you're growing to learn.
That's right. You know, like sometimes that's it. Like even say, you know, I sometimes see patients for voice therapy, and I have both the husband and the wife present. So when we're doing our techniques, or whether they may be diaphragmatic breathing or what it is, the husband has to work as hard as the client. And I say, I want to see that you're able to do it, because you are basically going to monitor to make sure that your wife is doing it correctly, so that you can coach and help and support. So because I have this thing, you know, they always say about practice makes perfect, but
mm-hmm.
practice is no good unless it's perfect. So it's perfect practice makes perfect. So that's why it's so important. If you want to relay or lay down new neural pathways, there's no point in learning it the wrong way and then having to relearn it again. So learning it correctly from the start. And the only way that a person can do that is with the help of, say, your loved ones who's there with you while you practice every single day.
Exactly.
Little and often.
That's mm-hmm. amazing. And teamwork help makes it more successful, both short and long term. You know, with our listeners or even our other individuals that will tune in later or have any opportunity of learning more of your work, your guidance, or most importantly also, having that relationship be able to create with you, because like caregivers, you are also a caregiver. You're not only a professional and have an amazing journey of guidance points in helping individuals with speech pathology, but also with your own personal journey, how you're taking care of one of your kids with that are going through this. So you have really the ability to suit and guide both caregivers and from the caregiver perspective of recommendations that you know work or that you've used, or also you have the professional perspective of, hey, this is what I do, this is what we recommend, find someone that does this, et cetera. I just wanted to see, is there any way that they could reach out to you or kind of follow some of your work if possible?
Do you know, I'm one of those dinosaurs who's not great on the social media. So many people said to me, oh, you should really, you know, put Michael's journey on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And even though I'm not that old, I'm in my 40s, but still, you know, me and social media, it's just not great. So I started off a small little Instagram account for Michael, and it's more just because so many people would like to know, you know, what's Michael up to, you know, where is he now? So he's got his little Instagram account, and it's called Michael Tribe 2016. And we called it Michael Tribe just because I felt that it takes a village to raise a child, but it takes a very special tribe to raise a child with additional needs. And that's certainly something that I have come across. I have been blessed with so many wonderful people that has crossed my path that I have learned from and able to apply the knowledge that I gained from them to Michael and, you know, his healing and all of that. So that's why I said, you know, so many people, it's like a little community when you are, whether you're a parent or whether you're a caregiver, you can't do it by yourself. And when you start looking around, there's so many people willing to help, willing to give you advice. And people are so good with their time and so generous with their time. And, you know, so that was why we called it Michael's Tribe. And then the company that I work for, from an audiological point of view, it's called Beacon Audiology. It's it's hearing and balance, and like I said, the auditory processing part. And so, yeah, people can look that up as well and see the work that we do there. It's a wonderful clinic to work for. Belongs to Dr. Sandra Cummings, and she has just a pioneer in, you know, all the best state of the art equipment, especially from a vestibular point of view, from a rotary chair to, you know, all of the different equipment that you need in order to extensively assess the vestibular system. So I'm a very fortunate position to be part of that team there. And then it's just, you know, like even Marinette Brennan, M-A-R-I-N-E-T Brennan @gmail.com. That's where, if people have any questions or anything like that, that's where they can reach me.
Perfect. Well, you know, I think it's phenomenal, not only, of course, that they can connect with you to get both personally the guidance from a mother or a caregiver about their journey, about their survivor, but also from the professional aspect as well. And I think it's very inspiring, even more, a little cherry on top. Also how they, if they want to learn more, get to just see how phenomenal this is, especially with Michael's journey, that they can follow it. They can stay tuned with that. So there's different avenues that you're really helping individuals, them, their families, their lifestyles, really gaining all sources of success. And I think it was great how you gave more about, you know, your work and also how you enjoy working for the team. But I think the team is really blessed to have someone like you. Again, it's not only because of who you are and what you do, but also most importantly, how you have used your own personal journey and your professional journey, really combining them together instead of picking and choosing, oh, hey, one, it's either one or none. So it's very inspiring what you do, who you are, and the guidance that you continue to give. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, James. Thank you.
No problem. And I know I've been asking you a series of questions back and forth, and I know it's a completely different time frame over there in Ireland. So I wanted to ask you before keeping you too late, do you have any questions for me?
Yeah, I just wanted to know, you know, in your own journey, would you have had any sort of difficulty sort of from an audiological or a balance point of view yourself?
You know, I'm glad you asked that. Yes, ma'am, I did. And I still do. I'm from my brain injury, I'm fully blind out of my left eye and deaf out of my left ear. So not only with the audiology, I had to kind of adapt with understanding, learning more only on the right-hand side. Also, just with certain things, it depends on where someone is standing, obviously, their distance, what side of my head they're on. I can hear them. It sounds like they're whispering, for example, if someone's on my left side and they're on my right side, I can hear them clearly. So I had to really adapt to that. And also with the balancing, with my depth perception being completely off, and especially with being partially blind and only having one eye, I had to relearn how to balance, how to walk, how to really go up and down stairs. And I still do have to deal with that on a daily basis. For example, when I'm going up and down stairs, I'm going to be the one that grabs the rail. And of course, the invisible disability, I get that weird look of, oh, why are you going so slow? Why are you on the rail? That you're kind of in the way, but it's playing it safe. I have had the difficulty where going at night and I thought I had it without grabbing a rail. And I saw a shadow, but I thought a shadow was the step, and I stepped down and overshot the step and put my foot where the shadow was. And luckily, I was holding the rail enough so I could catch myself. But if not, I would have rolled down the stairs. So I do have that difficulty, and still with my depth perception fully changed, I always have to look twice, make sure when I'm walking around, I look more to the left, driving, etc. It is difficult, but with the proper guidance and continuing, like you had stated, growing to learn and learning to grow, I'm still using the education and the power of technology to my advantage.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, that's very interesting. Thank you for sharing that. Just with regards to, say, the unilateral hearing loss that you report, have you ever tried a cross-hearing aid?
I have never tried any hearing aids just because, obviously, when I sustained mine, that was in 2011, excuse me, so about 12 years ago. This year will be 12 years, but technology was different to an extent. And also with the way that I was taught and learning, it was just, okay, sometimes someone might have to speak up or you just need to turn your head so you can hear. Because as you know, our ears are like cones. So when we hear, we can get a different angle, but again, it's just if someone is only on my left side, I can hear them. I just need them to speak up. It's kind of like the example you gave with the kids watching TV. If they're on my left side, they do need to speak slow and clearly, but then if they do fast, I try to keep up with them to pay attention. Also, I think what's good when you gave that example, because of my brain injury, and this is very common, and I know that you're aware of this with your line of work, we do have a very interesting journey about language and understanding, which deals with hearing as well. But one of my difficulties is with hearing, it's not only understanding, but it's actually with the gasping in of what the individual means by certain words. So that's not only with the brain, but it's also with hearing. I can hear one thing, but it might be coming in differently to a neurological pathway of what they're talking about or the word they use.
Yeah. I know the just going back to the cross hearing aid, which is actually quite interesting. So the way with the cross hearing aid, so basically what it is, so on the side where there is no hearing or significantly reduced hearing, you basically wear just a receiver transmitter. And basically what that does is it picks up sound on that side and it sends it over to the hearing ear, so that you don't have to be turning your neck the whole time. So it's really good for that kind of awareness, even from a safety point of view, when you're walking down the street, to maybe hear a bicycle coming from, say, for instance, your right side that's impaired, to be able to at least detect sound without having to, so it gives you that sound awareness. So from a safety point of view, that's great. But then from a conversational point of view, like you say, so yourself, you have to turn your head the whole time. And sometimes that can be a little bit difficult and also tiring as well from a physical point of view. So this basically helps by sending the sound from, say, for instance, the right affected side over to the better hearing ear on the left side for processing.
Thank you for sharing that. I never had that perspective brought my attention just because of the time frame and because how easy it was to learn to adapt. So that is it. Got to get with it instead of not doing it. But I really appreciate once again all you do, both personally and professionally, giving guidance and hope for our listeners, but also taking us down that personal journey with you for us to understand not only what you're going through in your family, but how you have used your own professional techniques to your advantage, and also giving our listeners a series of hope, education, and inspiration, and also the inspiration with following Michael's journey and also the steps, no pun intended, but the steps he's taken, the balance he's getting, and also giving them the opportunity to stay in touch with you and keep following his pathway.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much, James, and thank you for your time.
No problem. Thank you, Mayo. I look forward to keeping in touch, and I'll do my best to send people your way, and we'll stay tuned with Michael's update. But thank you, thank you, thank you once again for the opportunity.
You're very welcome. Take care.
You too, ma'am. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow, everyone. What a great show that was to wrap up our February series. As you heard Miss Marinette, she's not only calling in from Ireland, that's right, Ireland, but she gave us some really good guidance and education with speech pathology after sustaining a brain injury, and also took us on that personal journey of hers that she is dealing with one of her twins, Michael, and the way that she has gone through his journey, but also using her profession to help guide her so she can relate both caregiver and a coach, aka medical supervisor, that can help us with different areas of speech pathology, hearing, and balance during our brain injury journey. If you would like to hear more from her, connect with her. As she stated, she gave her email, her son's Instagram, and also her business website. Please feel free to reach out. If you did not hear that or have any questions, please contact us and we will be happy to connect you or answer any questions we can. As always, thank you for continuing to work with us to change the world to a better place and spread brain injury awareness, hope, and inspiration. And please continue to follow us on social media. One love.